Blog Talk Radio.
Hello out there in the blog talkosphere. Welcome back to another episode of Soul Empowerment Radio. I'm your host tonight, Michael Brazel. And here we are once again, another beautiful, wonderful evening, another time to come together, to share, to be in this moment with each other. And I, as always, thank all of you for showing up and for being part of this experience with me, whether it's listening live as we broadcast or listening to us in the future in a download via iTunes or the show page. I do always appreciate that. It's always wonderful to see, I look back, over the show, over the months and see all the different downloads and things. So it blows my mind sometimes that we have this technology and this landing place for us to come together, to co-create, and to share in our own personal evolution, but also taking this information back out into the world to help co-create a much more powerful experience for those around us as well. So thank you for tuning in. And we go live every night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can find us here. We have a variety of guests that we are scheduling for the new year. So please, keep checking out the show and keep tuning in. Before we get started, let's just take a breath together and let's just arrive in this moment. And on the inhale and exhale, and let the breath be an invitation for you to just return to the body for a moment, to just arrive in this moment with us here now, wherever you are, whether it's here now or in the future. Let's just breathe together and hold sacred space for a moment. We don't get to do that too often, just pause and breathe. And I think it's necessary. It's a missing piece of the puzzle a lot of times. And the beautiful breath that's constantly moving through your body is echoing the call of your heart to just return back home to the body for just a few minutes each and every single day. So I do appreciate that we get these moments to just pause and to be present. So we have a very special show for you tonight. I'm very excited about our special guest. It's not too often. I read a lot of books, and I usually go through books very quickly. I'm usually a pretty quick reader. And it's not too often that I come across books that really shift me as I'm reading the book, meaning I'll read something in the book that just shifts the belief system or changes my perspective on an idea that I may have held for a really long time, or opens me up to something so new that I just have to set the book down for a minute to let whatever shifting shift and whatever is being absorbed, you know, absorb into my consciousness. But this book did that. And tonight, my special guest is Barbara Marks Hubbard. And we're going to be talking about her latest book, The Evolutionary Testament of Co-Creation, The Promise Will Be Kept. And it's an evolutionary, future-oriented perspective to the Gospels of Jesus Christ. And it's a really powerful book. You can tell a lot of love and a lot of work went into this book. And for me, I was hoping that I'd be through the book, so I could have a blog post up, but that's still coming. But I'm finding, like, you know, it really is a book that's shifting me as I read it. And I feel that that may have been part of the intention for putting it out into the world. So I'm going to read to you a little bit about Barbara, and then we're going to bring her on the show and talk about this delicious new book. Barbara Marks Hubbard has been called the voice for conscious evolution by Deepak Chopra. As the subject of Neil Donald Walsh's book, The Mother of Invention, many would agree Barbara is the world's foremost global ambassador for conscious change. At heart, Barbara Marks Hubbard is a visionary, a social innovator. She thinks from an evolutionary perspective and believes that global change happens when we work collectively and selflessly for the greater good. She realizes that the lessons of evolution teach us that problems are evolutionary drivers and that crisis precedes transformation. This gives us a new way of seeing and responding to our global situation. A prolific author and educator, Barbara has written 7 books on social and planetary evolution. She has produced, hosted, and contributed to countless documentaries seen by millions of people around the world. In conjunction with the Shift Network, Barbara co-produced a worldwide Birth 2012 multimedia event that was seen as a historic turning point in exposing the social, spiritual, scientific, and technological potential in humanity. In 1984, her name was placed in nomination for the Vice Presidency of the United States on the Democratic Party ticket. She called for the creation of a peace room to scan for, map, connect, and communicate what is working in America and all around the world. She also co-chaired a number of Soviet American citizen summits, introducing a new concept called SynCon to foster synergistic convergence between opposing groups. In addition, she co-founded the World Future Society and the Association for Global New Thought. Barbara Marks Hubbard is not an idealist, nor does she believe that social and planetary change is simple, but she does believe that humanity has the tools, fortitude, and resolve to take the leap towards conscious evolution. And without further ado, I welcome on Barbara Marks Hubbard. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you for inviting me and being so receptive. Thank you.
I definitely appreciate your work, and I think, you know, especially I think it's timely too that we're having, you know, your book come out and this discussion with all the things that are happening in the world. But before we get too far in, I think, you know, for me, your story leading up to how this book came into being is also pretty interesting. Would you care to share a little bit about how this book
Yes.
To be in your path to it?
Well, I have been a founder of the World Future Society. I was a friend of Jonas Salk. I was studying the biological revolution, the information revolution, you know, artificial intelligence, and I already saw we were all being changed. And then I was attempting to write a book on the future of humanity when I was taking a walk in Santa Barbara, and I saw at the Mount Calvary Monastery, a big iron cross reaching up into the heavens. And there was a hang gliders club jumping off a higher mountain in Santa Barbara, floating in butterfly-colored wings above the cross at Mount Calvary. And it just hit me, oh my God, mass metamorphosis. We shall all be changed. In the words of St. Paul, behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep. We shall all be changed. And then I had a Christ experience right there in which I felt, you might say, a presence of the risen Christ. And I'm a Jewish agnostic futurist, and so this was not like in my path. And this presence said, Barbara, when you love God above all else, your neighbor as yourself, yourself as a natural Christ, combined with science and technology, you will all be changed. I want demonstrations now, Barbara. And since I already was a futurist and had already been really researching the transhuman potential of humanity, really, I went into the monastery and picked up a Bible, and I began to read, like St. Paul, "Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep. We shall all be changed." And I began to write, not channeled writing, but expanded knowing. You know, an Akashic field opened up. Of course, Jesus was ourselves in the future. He said, "You will do the works that I did, and greater works will you do in the fullness of time." And I thought, oh my God, he was right. We are doing it. What if we combine Christ's love with these new capacities? And then I began to see that the New Testament was the best those people, those writers, could do in describing a person who was embodying the future of all humanity for real. And they made it the only Son of God, and they made it the only one, because at that moment he was the only one. But you know, right now, the fact is there are millions of people evolving. So I'm opening up, so let's say it's all of us, potentially. And it's not about Christianity. It's about the evolution of humanity, and Jesus was the greatest evolutionary agent that the world has ever known.
Wow. Yeah, it's an interesting perspective. And I, you know, oftentimes you hear people say that, you know, the divine, God, the creatrix, has stopped speaking to us. And there's always a question of why hasn't the Bible ever been updated, you know? And when I read, you know, did we lose connection somewhere? Did the Wi-Fi signal get lost?
Does God no longer speak to humans? It just stopped?
Right. And I thought it was interesting because when I was reading this book, because you go through the New Testament, it's like line by line, and it's an inspired work. And it seems to me like, you know, when someone says that, you know, God has stopped speaking, I can show them this and say, like, this is how God is speaking. It's really just inspiring this new information to come forward. And it's really nice to see someone take this book that tends to cause a lot of division. open up a new pathway for unity.
And there's an afterword in the book by my friend Mark Gaffney, who is a rabbi and a Jewish scholar. And just a few of the things he says in this discussion of Barbara Marks Hubbard's critical book: "I want to answer the implicit question of the intelligent reader as to why this work matters so enormously. First, let's examine some of the questions. Is there a God? Does God speak to human beings? And does God speak to me?" These are critical questions. And then it's a sacred text. So then he goes on to say, "Did God speak to Barbara Marks Hubbard in the form of a revelation? Well, is there such a thing as a true reading of the sacred text?" And he goes on and on. He said, "Before I go any further, my own thoughts is Barbara did hear divine revelation. I'm sure of it. I know this because I've heard the same voice she did. It spoke in different terms to her, but I'm able to clearly recognize the fragrance of authentic divine revelation within her text."
Right.
So the importance of that Mark wrote is that in some deep way, everyone is available to hear the voice of God.
Right.
Everyone.
Right. Yeah, it's beautiful to see that this work is now coming forward, especially now with so much crisis happening around us. And it seems like it's even more important now than ever for us to step into co-creation. So what does co-creation mean to you? Because you hear this word tossed around a lot in different paradigms. And I'm just curious what co-creation is to you in relation to your work.
Well, if you take the creative impulse of evolution, you can call it a creator, which is a more personalized version of it, or you can call it a creative process. From the origin of creation in the Big Bang, you see this consciousness force. It's Aurobindo's word for it. You see absolutely mysterious intelligence in every particle, in every atom, molecule, and cell, all the way on up in an evolutionary journey that has direction, purpose, and opening of ever greater consciousness for those of us who are participating in it. So I actually experienced in myself before I wrote this that the evolutionary impulse is a divine impulse of creation. It's embodied in every one of us as our unique potential expression. And if you're lucky enough to have a vocation, a life purpose that truly calls you forward, you then become a co-creator. That is to say, let's see, I feel you are. I can tell from the way you talk. You are a co-creator because the creative impulse is alive in you. And when you speak, you're creating with it. And right. even if you go all the way, you are creating as it. God and I are one. You know, why should you be creating just about it? You're creating as it. So the deepest level of co-creation is the humans one with the creative intention uniquely themselves.
Wow. Yeah, I think, you know, it's beautiful that now we have all of this technology and it allows us to do things that, you know, even just a few years ago, we never thought we'd be able
right.
to do.
Like virgin
and seeing kids, yeah. Yeah, and seeing kids.
You know, things like,
yeah.
I mean, some of them are like, oh, virgin birth. Well, oh, sure, we're doing it every day. I mean, I don't say that's the way it happened with Jesus,
right.
but it could have. That's the thing.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
Virgin birth.
Point.
Oh. Yeah, really.
Yeah. And
maybe
just,
he
just
did
like,
come in and I'm a Christian fundamentalist evolutionary. Maybe he came in on a light beam. You know, we're actually sending DNA on light beams.
Wow. Yeah, it's interesting how fast like things are moving and how quickly technology is evolving us as we evolve it. What do you think the fear is? Because, you know, I hear a lot in my circles and friends of mine who are more religious or devoutly opposed to the intersectionality of, you know, technology and spirituality.
Right.
Why do you think such a fear like that exists?
Well, I think it's a very legitimate fear because starting with the atomic bomb in 1945, which got me started as a 15-year-old girl, the misuse of high technology power by a self-centered species is deadly. The guidance of high technology power by a co-creative, divinely inspired species is the evolution of humanity. And so most people do not have a clue that they are co-creators of this and that their purpose, instead of saying, I don't like it, I don't want it, it's going on anyway, it's never going to stop by the fact that you don't like it. It's got billions of dollars behind it. So let's step in front of it, folks. Let's step in front of it and guide it, folks, instead of pulling away stupidly, if I may say so.
Right.
Stupidly.
Right.
Reactionary. Neo-Luddites. Shoot. No more of that. It's
right.
not going to happen. I mean, it's not going to happen that way. You're just turning it over. Don't turn the power over. That's what I'm saying. Do not do that. Folks,
yeah.
Folks, do not do that.
Such an important
thing.
That is
very,
very
silly to do. Yes,
yeah.
and most of my friends, you know, I was almost loath to bring this thing up because most of my friends don't like high technology, much less Jesus. Come forward with Jesus and high technology, then you could fall through every crack in the possible evolutionary
right.
community. So you know what? I'm sure you're one of them like me. I can just feel your presence.
Mm-hmm.
Is so you know, I'm 86 years old on December 22nd. God gave me all this, And you know what I really think? It's going to be demonstrated during our lifetime that we can connect co-creators worldwide and shift the system.
Wow.
I actually think that the crisis is a birth of a more universal humanity, and that every single one of us who has the slightest bit of love and creativity in us, is part of it. And the purpose of this book is, for goodness sakes, for humanity. Let it come forth out of you.
Right. It's the clarion call. It's time for
it
us
is.
To stop surrendering our power and start stepping into our own power.
Exactly. And
I think,
why were we given powers of this godlike
right.
capability? I mean, godlike.
Because,
yeah, as Jesus said, don't
like
you
this,
know,
yeah.
ye are, he said, haven't you noticed ye are gods? He said that.
Right.
Haven't you noticed?
Yeah.
I have noticed.
I mean, the fact that we can connect, like, over, you know, thousands of miles, and, you know, and this information, you know, will be out there for years and years and years to come. And I think that's just fascinating to me to see, like, you know, what we can do now with technology. And you see things like Facebook and how we're able to connect socially with people that we never would have been able to before.
Exactly.
So you use the word evolutionary a lot. And I've heard Jesus called a radical, a revolutionary, a heretic. You know, many you call him an evolutionary. So can you tell us a little bit about what that means to you, calling Jesus the greatest evolutionary that ever lived?
Well, it's a great compliment because, you see, if you look at the mystery story from the whatever was those first 3 seconds, called facetiously the Big Bang, perfectly designed in those first 3 seconds for the ability to create matter, energy, and life. Perfectly designed. That was so. The mystery of that, just start there. And
right.
then see, from that mystery came particles, electrons, protons, all of them joining together by allurement. And Brian Swim's word for it, attraction of particle to particle, cell to cell, all the way on up to you and me. That if you look up that sort of evolutionary spiral from the origin of creation through the formation of universe, earth, life, animal life, human life, and now you and me sitting here on this phone, this nervous system connecting us, in the noosphere, using Teilhard de Chardin's phrase for it, that impulse is divine. That impulse is so super genius intelligence. And when I hear some still remaining materialistic scientists say there's no direction or purpose or meaning in the universe, and Steven Weinberg said the more you learn about it, the more meaningless it becomes, the more pointless it becomes. Well, I would say the exact opposite.
Right.
The more you learn about, the more illuminating it becomes, and that you personally should be an expression of it, whatever
right.
it is, and that your vocation, your life purpose is an expression of this. Well, that is the approach I'm taking.
Right. It's often said that magic is science waiting to be proven, and science is magic that's already been proven. I think there's just so many mysteries out there. We haven't even explored the bottom of the ocean yet. So I think it's
right. But if you have to take the 13.8 billion years mm-hmm. perspective, and I feel we need evolutionary eyes.
Yeah.
Evolutionary eyes is context. Context
yeah.
creates reality. Most people do not have an evolutionary context. They do not experience themselves as an expression of the evolutionary potential, become conscious mm-hmm. in them. Like you and I are an expression of mm-hmm. evolution, conscious as us.
Right. What do you think
I mean,
would
really
help
true.
To facilitate that shift for people? both collectively and individually?
I think part of what's going to do it is crisis.
Hmm.
I think we have to turn it up or it's not going to boil. Wait, what? So I'm cooking dinner. part of what I believe is the meaning of the crisis we're facing, starting climate change and all of that, is the awakening of humanity to consciously evolving ourselves.
Yeah.
That if we do not awaken and we assume that we can continue to grow in a more self-centered way within the womb of Earth without changing, we now have heard we'll go extinct. This is a really great hearing that we've had recently in the whole climate change conference where people have said, you know, the fate of the Earth. And it evidently did activate our leaders to be able to at least sign something in the direction of stopping it.
Right. Yeah, I often hear a lot of people who end up, they're very fatalist about it all. You know, let's just use it all up and let's, you know, destroy it all. Like, we're gonna feel the rapture anyways, you know. Or people who even say, like, you know, I'll just wait and let the next generation do it. It's like we do a lot to shift away personal responsibility. But you often speak of no matter where you are, no matter what age you are, step into your power and start affecting those changes around you now.
You know what I'd like to say in here, rather than it's everyone's duty and responsibility to do that, is the joy in it.
Mm, right.
The enormity of finding an impulse inside yourself that's creative as your life purpose. The enormity of, I would say, the blessing of being able to say yes to that and discover, like you have, I can tell, like you have, to discover a particular vocation that you have. It's very different than my vocation. And all the people listening in to know how many vocations are on the phone right now. If we asked, you know, if we had an interactive live, and everybody right at this moment, we could just ask them, tune in to your deepest life purpose, what attracts you most to express as you.
Mm.
And realize that almost everybody needs somebody else or many others to fulfill it. You cannot do it alone.
Right. Right. And I think, too, now since we have the ability to connect so quickly and so powerfully, that we should be stepping into our power. I think sometimes the distractions get the best of us.
Well, you know, here's my word for it. This is really helpful. The word is from sex to supra-sex. Okay, nature invented sex to get us to join genes to have the babies. And we did a really great job. We cannot continue to replicate up to maximum.
Right.
What's happening in many of us, including the feminine co-creator like myself, is we are activated to give birth to the greater self. We're activated to give birth to the expression of divine creativity by joining genius instead of genes. And when you join genius with anybody, you know what? You get joy.
Mm.
You get love. You get telerotic, telos and eros. And the same motivation that got us to reproduce is getting us to co-create. That's what I think.
Wow. So in the title of the book, you mentioned the promise will be kept. Can you speak a bit about what that promise is?
Well, it was a mystery even to Jesus, but basically is, behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep. We shall all be changed. And the change, I believe, was demonstrated from the crucifixion through the 3 days in the tomb to the resurrection. And I believe the promise is the evolution of our species into a new human. and that the great avatars of our culture and all different cultures have come in to give guidelines to different cultures. But the one that we got in the Judeo-Christian culture, particularly with Jesus, who was totally Jewish, was that we shall all be changed, and that the divine process of creation is creating co-creators with the divine. We're created in the image of God, and we are to be like God. But it's not the old image of God, the dominator, father. It's God, the co-creator within us, and that's what Jesus represented, the new God that's in every one of us. And when you say yes to it, I'll tell you, I mean, I'm really feeling this in my own life because I've known this for some time. But the crises we're feeling collectively on Earth, with climate change being the most obvious, is awakening millions of us. And what is it awakening? Like, what is it awakening you to? How about you? How do you feel?
For me, I feel like it's really awakening us to take responsibility. For me, I feel like my call has been to be more present with the people around me. You know, I feel like I'm shifting from living in my head to living from my heart. I'm finding, like, the old practices, you know, simplicity, you know, like actually talking to people and having those, like we're doing here, these interpersonal conversations with people and actually having discussions like this and no longer coddling that sense that we can't talk about this stuff. Because I feel like we have to talk about it.
We have to talk, and you know what, when we do, there's that word resonance, resounding. See, everyone is actually an essential self. Everyone. And most of us are dominated by our local selves, in my language, you know, the separated self, the egoic self. But the minute you get, I'm teaching this on my own classes, when you get to be related to your own essence, you fall in love with the deeper self.
Right.
And then you fall in love with the deeper self in others.
Right.
And then you don't want to go back into separation because it's too painful.
Right. Right.
Separation is painful.
Yeah, and it's something I think that, you know, we come into. You know, it's always often said that once we're birthed, we're birthed into that sense of separation. And part of the soul journey is that we're looking once again for that those points of reconnection. And
exactly.
I'm seeing it more and more now. People, I've seen so many of my friends who are involved in deep spirituality making these shifts from talking about all this high mind stuff to all this, it's really just heart-centered. Stuff, and it's really powerful to see that people are making that transition on their own. When we see crisis, instead of, you know, some of us will still go in that direction. We put blame and try to decide who's doing it, and you're seeing people go into the heart and having compassion for what's happening, you know, and being open and receptive to the whatever the message and the teaching is in the crisis.
Yeah. It's exactly right. Oh, you know, I feel like we might as well say a huge yes. Yes to our potential. Yes to the crisis. Yes to our possibilities. And when you say yes, like I've said yes, and I had 5 children. I was miserable. I was feeling like I was misbegotted housewife in Lakeville, Connecticut, who loved her children and was lost. Now, that was in the late 1950s, early 60s. And then through a pathway of finding Abraham Maslow toward a psychology of being, and he said, every self-actualizing person has one thing in common, chosen work they find intrinsically self-rewarding and of service. Chosen work means vocation, means calling from your deeper essence. So then I realized, okay, that was the missing link in my life. I loved everybody, my children, my husband, my family, everything. But I didn't have vocation. Because being a housewife and a mother was what I was doing, but it wasn't that intrinsic uniqueness of myself. So then I did begin to study it and find it. And what I'm able to say about the evolutionary testament of co-creation, it's a call to everyone to do this. Everyone. Right.
And how do you feel that this book now can serve people? Like, what is your hope that they'll receive in reading this book?
They would embody in themselves that impulse of love and creativity that is their true essential nature, and act on it and connect with others around it.
Right.
And experience the joy of co-creation. That would be it.
I think, too, sometimes when we, especially when we talk about Christ and becoming Christ-like, that there is that fear, because Jesus was put up on a cross. You know, so people fear, like, if they start stepping into their Christ-centered power or accessing that Christ consciousness within them, that they may be persecuted for their thoughts. Has that fear ever been something that you've had to work through or thought about when you first started taking on this work?
Well, yes. I didn't so much feel persecuted, but rejected.
Mm.
I mean, when I came out with this in 19, I guess the first, I was funded by Lawrence Rockefeller. By the way, he thought that this was a way of bringing forth the Christ of the 21st century.
Mm.
So I came out with that, and it was rejected by everybody, just about. Mainly the human potential movement didn't like it at all, because they were saying, stop growing, we've done wrong. And I was saying, we're just beginning, let's grow. and then nobody, I mean, none of my friends were at least bit interested in Jesus, much less that they're all natural Christ. That was the last thing they were thinking of. And the Christians couldn't accept it because they didn't know. But, you know, I want to tell you something really. I'm going to read you this because it's very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wonderful Catholic theologian and author called Ilia Delio. I don't know if you've ever heard of her, but she's a major writer. And her current book is called Making All Things New. And I just want to tell you what she said about me. She says, after searching the lines of Catholicity from the Big Bang to quantum consciousness and evolution to the life of Jesus and the emergence of the church and so on, chapter 9 revisits the meaning of Catholicity, which meaning for her is the whole, in light of scientific insights and cosmology, and asks, what are we called on today as citizens of the universe, as followers of Jesus? Now, she is a nun. She's definitely a Christian nun. And then she said, of the four models discussed in Chapter 9, Pope Francis, Barbara Marx Hubbard, the Dalai Lama, and the Leadership Conference of Women Religious are the ones I will be focusing on. Now, the very fact that I should possibly be in that company, particularly Pope Francis and the Dalai Lama. So let's just take, and Ilya was not saying this to compliment me, in the chapter 9, she says, Barbara is a Christic fractal. I'm sure millions of us are Christic fractals. Not Jesus-centered. I don't belong to a church. I'm not a Christian. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have no label for myself. But the Christic fractal is you're holding the essence of the divine in you as your creative expression. And the best expression of this is my friend Mark Gaffney, who calls it evolutionary unique self. Mm-hmm. That you are an expression of the irreducible, magnificent process of creation as you. And as that, you have everything to give. And to hold back and hide up and just say Jesus was that personified. We're not asking anybody to have faith in somebody else. We're asking people to have faith in themselves. That's all.
Right.
Totally, totally, completely not about faith in somebody else, not about the church, about you and me.
Right. Yeah, and it's often that's where you see, I think, the fear, because, you know, once we realize that we don't need the middleman to get to
there's no middleman, right.
That space, yeah. It shows that, you know, I think it removes that fear structure that overculture and especially religious overculture has put on us for accessing our own sense of God.
And I really want to invite your listeners to join with us in the Evolutionary Testament webinar, which will start on January 6th, because I have about 12 amazing teachers and theologians like Neil Donald Walsh, Michael Beckwith, Ilya Delio, the one who I just read, Mary Manon Morrissey, who has, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of followers. These are all colleagues. And I want you all to just go to evolutionary.academy, register, and consider registering to this that starts on January 6th, Epiphany Day. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have 12 weeks of revelation of embodying this with the best teachers and theologians I know, and some of them are extremely well-known and famous and distinguished, like Neil and Michael and so on. And some of them are less well-known, but all of them. My friend Mark Gaffney, who wrote, you know, Your Unique Self with Ken Wilber, I mean, these people, what I feel we need now is to bring forth this whole movement. And the movement is writ large, but I would call it evolutionary spiritual movement.
Right.
In the sense that it sees the divine process of creation as spiritual. It sees us as an expression of it, co-creating with it, as it. That's what co-creator means.
Right.
I believe that we should be looking through all the sacred texts of humanity. And I happen to have been inspired by the sacred texts of the New Testament.
Right.
But you could look through all of them. And my friend Mark Gaffney and I are going to do a tremendous teaching after we do the Evolutionary Testament is on probing into this huge evolutionary spirituality that's awakening in masses of people because of the crisis. You can't just join a church. Joining a church is great, but, I mean, the church itself is evolving. Everybody I know who's really spiritual is evolving.
Right.
They're not trying to hold on to a dogma. Nobody. Unless you're totally reactionary. There are some reactionary people, and you see the most of them in the Republican Party. They're really going to have a trouble with that.
Yes, yes. I think, you know, if anything, the
it's
last
like they all
debate,
got together. They all got together and stood on the stage and said, here we are. And you know what? We say, crises precede transformation. Problems are evolutionary drivers. So the entire Republican Party is a response, a reactive response to crisis.
Mm.
The entire movement that I would call evolutionary is a proactive response to crisis, using crisis as a stimulus to become more instead of less. The entire Republican Party is a reactive response to crisis because they don't know any better. They do not know any better.
And I think that's one of the things I've always loved about your work is it's in watching what you bring together, because I see you as this person that really just brings together all these this intersectionality between, you know, things like technology and new thought and new age and new science. And it's like we need these bubbles to come together because that's where the ripples begin to launch out and start to create these shifts for us.
We totally do. And I think there is no well-known existing category to contain all this mm-hmm. yet. You know, you can't say it's New Thought or it's Christianity or progressive Christianity. I think the closest is Integral with Ken Wilber.
Right.
But I would say I have a partner in this. I have a person whose memes are very close to my own is Mark Gaffney. In his book, Your Unique Self, The Radical Path to Personal Enlightenment. And Mark and I, it's a phrase I've always hypothesized how to do it, but it's called joining genius. Mm. Instead of joining genes to have the baby, we are called to join genius to give birth to the greater self. And if it's true, it's obviously true that joining genes creates a newness in the baby. My attraction as an 86-year-old woman, totally beyond age, is joining genius. And because I found in Mark Gaffney someone whose genius is so aligned to my own but different, new, mm-hmm. creative, he said, let's join genius. So I would say to your listeners, think of, is there anybody you'd like to join genius with? And it doesn't have to be just two. You can join genius with a few, lots of people. I could join genius with you. I think, what's your name, the one who's interviewing me?
Michael Brother.
Michael. I think, Michael, I have a lot of interviews, you know. Mm-hmm. The minute I heard your voice, I knew you're an evolutionary impulse of creation.
Oh,
and
awesome.
I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for that because I could hear it in your voice.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's nice. And one of the things that excited me so much about this book was when I was reading it, I feel like this is the book I've been waiting for a long time, you know, and I came across for me to sit and read it and really to absorb it. And it is shifting me, you know. It's not often that as I'm reading, I have to put the book down because something in me has, you know, an old idea has fractured, you know, this old belief mm-hmm. system has completely tumbled away, and I have to give it a moment to like integrate back into this new line of thought. And I'm finding like my highlighter is like working in overtime reading your book,
well,
and little notes and things. And
I could tell from your voice. The reason you're moved by this is because it's moving you already.
Mm.
And here's my intuition. If you could do a planetary scan right this second, I call this the communion of pioneering souls. How many people on Earth are emergent, are homo progressivus, attracted to the emerging potential in themselves and in the world without any label on it? How many of us are there? And so when I do a scan like that, just kind of in my mind's eye and my heart's, I feel the answer I would get, there is enough mm. of us. Now, the us is the emerging human. Race, color, creed, or religion. No religion holds this yet. None.
Right.
And religion will actually fade away when we become co-creators. We're not going to have religion. Religions had to do this for thousands of years because we couldn't do it. I mean, that is to say, incarnate the divine as ourselves. We couldn't do it.
Right.
My book, Emergence, The Shift from Ego to Essence, really helps us. My book, 52 Codes, really helps us because I have been a pioneer of making it happen within myself.
Right.
And I can tell you that it also regenerates you. Mm-hmm. It illuminates you. I'm amazed at what it does to you. So instead of saying, oh, it's such a burden or we have to deal with it, no, it's the greatest privilege on earth.
It really is. It really is, and that in itself is a unique shift because you know, people who, when they step into spirituality, they feel like they are stepping into burden. And for me, it's always been,
yes, they do.
This is what I've always wanted to do. This is like, this is it, you know? And it's like, you know, colors, you see colors differently. And you see other beings. Like I even see little ants sometimes, and I'll have little conversations with them. You feel the interconnectedness of it all, you know?
You see, so the blessing that you're speaking of, Michael, the blessing is having the inner experience that you're having. Instead of, oh my God, I'm responsible for the future of the world. Yeah, I like the word responsive, response-able. I am response-able to the impulse of evolution of divine creativity as it shows up in me. Well, when you say yes to as it shows up in me, it's not about your ego. Your ego will block it. But as it shows up in your essence is it. And in that book, Emergence, The Shift from Ego to Essence, I go through how I felt compulsive, overworked, and so forth. And I finally decided, Barbara, if you're communicating about a positive future and you are feeling this way, you better stop. You know, I couldn't, I was ambivalent about myself. So I stopped and I put my attention on the experience of higher guidance. And gradually the experience was a resonant field that came into my heart. And I realized I am my own essence. Mm. It isn't projected on some other being. I am it. You are it. We are it. And it's really out of that. Well, when I had the Christ experience, but basically the message was, call me your potential self, all of you.
Mm.
You are the way, Barbara. You are the way.
Right.
Michael, you and I and all your listeners are the way.
Absolutely. There's a saying that one of the Grand Masters in a Magical System that I studied for a while said, and it really resonates with what we're talking about. He said, he was Victor Anderson, and he said, God is self, self is God, and God is a person like myself. And it really speaks to that personal autonomy, that when we realize that we are the creatrix living this experience versus we are seeking it or running from it or, you know, being pulled by it.
Yeah.
That we are it. It gives
That's
us
so
that
beautiful,
power
Michael.
Create.
We are it, and the it, if you have evolutionary eyes, you see this evolutionary impulse of the creative intention for billions of years to create more complex systems capable of higher consciousness, freedom, and order. So we happen to be the generation in whom the higher consciousness, freedom, and order has materialized because we're facing conscious evolution or devolution and death. The crises we're facing is essential for our evolution, like the crisis of birth of a baby who was doing really well in the womb. You know, the baby is not happy about being born.
The baby
is miserable. Not only that, it doesn't know it's being born. It thinks it's dying. And all the people on Earth who think this is terrible, and somehow we should go back to what we were, well, first of all, you can't. And secondly, if you really get attracted to what's emergent, you don't want to.
Right. It's the birthing process. You know, I always often tell my students it's a brutally beautiful, you know, process, because, you know, it's this new thing is coming forward, but through that there is going to be blood and there's going to be tearing and there's going to be screaming.
Right, it's very, very. I've
crying.
Had five children. You know, it's amazing how painful it is and how you want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that right
how,
there,
you know,
even through the pain, you want it. You know,
I didn't feel this way, but many women, including my daughters, wanted to have natural childbirth, in other words, not to have anything to block their experience. I was of the younger, I had my babies in the 50s, and we didn't even think of that. But my daughter, with her children, she wanted to feel it all.
Hmm.
So maybe what we could say in a planetary birth experience now, if we're being born as a co-creative species, those of us who can stand the pain and see it as a driver towards birth are like mothers and fathers giving birth. That's what we are.
Mm. Right.
So when you think of it as a planetary birth experience, then it's really different than thinking of it as death.
Right.
There's a really big difference between death and birth. But you know
right.
what? I remember thinking one time when I was having one of my children, and I thought, if I didn't know I was giving birth, I'd think I was dying.
Mm.
Because, and then
wow.
when I had given birth to this little organism who was so weird and strange and ugly, just like 1 second after birth, if I didn't know that that baby had potential, I'd die a second time
right.
after seeing what I'd delivered. But I would, but I knew
yeah.
what it was. And there's
right.
this, in the feminine co-creator, there's a really organic impulse of loving the unknown child,
mm.
no matter what the pain. And it's in the fathers, too, because they love, but they don't have the bodily experience that the woman does
right.
of giving birth. And I'm making the expression, Michael, that we are now feminine and masculine co-creators. We're giving birth to a new culture, and it has got the same pain and the same drama as giving birth to the babies.
Right. Right.
And it's a beautiful analogy
that, yeah.
because it's loving. You know, it's very, very
right.
loving.
Right. Yeah,
that's what I'm feeling
the
right
walls
now.
Fall away. Yeah, those walls
and
are
coming
Jesus, down pretty quickly.
The wall, so let's go back to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
There is this magnificent person, being, who came in and knew all this ahead of time and told us all that we would do the works that he did and greater works. And when he said that to us, I would say in my book, Evolutionary Testament, it's revealed that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing the work and greater work, and we need to put it into the Christ energy of love. And then we shall all be changed. We're already being
right.
changed anyway.
Right. Yeah, I often heard one of my other teachers will often say that, you know, we're stepping into this new phase where we're becoming the transcosmic human, where we are
right.
not just limited by the earthly bounds, but we're also expanding into, you know, the other realms of existence beyond the gravitational pull of our own ecosystem.
Well, you know, Michael, when you think of the billions of other planets out there
mm-hmm.
and the billions of other dimensions out there, and we're entering into it all simultaneously
right.
together, whether we know it or not. Those of us who know it are extremely important right now for our species.
Right.
Like you, it's important that you have this show. It's really important.
Right. Well, thank you for that. I definitely appreciate that. So, you know, as we make this shift and as we grow, you know, it doesn't take much to look at the news and to think that Armageddon's like right around the corner. And like,
uh-huh.
you know,
well, maybe it is.
They keep using it. Yeah, it could be. what do you feel like would help to? Because you know, it seems like you know, fear porn is constant
right.
these days, especially. What do you think that we should do to help maybe, you know, balance out what we're receiving from that space or to
I think people should
it.
Read the Evolutionary Testament of co-creation and join my webinar on, on the January 6th, starting on Epiphany Day. And I really invite you, Michael. I would love to comp you this. So
oh,
that you could
perfect.
Be on
great.
It and tell me what you feel about it.
Oh, I'd love that.
I think
that
it would
very
be really
much.
Important to us. If you would email me back, please, just telling,
absolutely.
You know, just reminding me of this. I will comp you on to from January 6th onward and ask you to let me know what you think about it. And
oh,
if you
I'd
want
love
to speak about it, you will do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I definitely appreciate that. And I appreciate you, you know, taking time to join me here and for laughing with me and co-creating this experience with me. I think, you know, it's beautiful that we have this place of creation, this place to intersect.
Yeah.
And I definitely invite any listener out there to pick up this book. Like I said, this book has shifted me. It's opened me up to new ideas and ways of even perceiving my own sense of being in the world. So I appreciate you for putting this book out there and for doing that.
Thank
is there
you,
anything
Michael.
You want to leave everyone with as we close out tonight?
Well, a crisis is the birth of the potential of you. Every listener who gets turned on to their own potential and to the possibility of joining genius with others is the way.
Well, excellent. Thank you so much, Barbara, for joining us tonight and for sharing this space. And I thank all of you, listeners, for being here and for sharing this time with us tonight. And for those of you listening in the future, because of technology, you can listen to this on the download. We appreciate you joining us as well. And again, pick up the book, pick up a copy of the book, The Evolutionary Testament of Co-Creation. Be sure you go to evolutionary.academy to sign up for the course. It's going to be pretty amazing. I'm not going to be taking it and reporting back. You know, all
you're
the going
to be
things.
Taking it, Michael, for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
That's
Barbara.
So great. I'm delighted to meet you, Michael. You're just a great person, I can tell.
Thank you so much, Barbara. And once again, everyone, tune in every night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be back tomorrow night with more exciting adventures here on the airwaves. Have a wonderful evening, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Barbara.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.